Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
All right, good morning. It's Saturday, the 24th of October. That makes this Solder Smoke 117, Solder Smoke 117. Been away for a while. It's been a while since we've done a real Solder Smoke podcast. So a lot of things to report on. Start out with a little bit of Italy travelogue. I have a bad back. I've got lower back pain, and I know exactly why. A lot of people have this malady and are not sure what's causing it. I know what's causing mine. Mine was caused by our activities of last Sunday. We were out at the country place in the beautiful Sabine Hills, and the day started out with the lovely and talented Maria Patricia, 9 years old, asking for a piggyback tour of the olive grove. And of course I said yes, and we spent about a half hour of touring. Now, there was a time when this wouldn't really cause problems, but Maria's, as I found out, getting bigger and heavier. And so, this wasn't a really good thing to do if you have the potential for lower back problems. But of course, we made things worse because the next activity of the day was horseback riding. And when I told somebody about this, they said to me, "Oh, do you know how to ride horses?" And I said, "No," but I was still horseback riding. We went into town, and my wife Elisa mentioned to one of the storekeepers in town that we asked if there was a place where the kids could ride horses. And just this is a sign of how nice people are out in this area. The storekeeper said, "Well, I'll see what I could do." And we went back to the house, and I'm sitting out in the front porch reading the newspaper, and all of a sudden, three horsemen approach on three of the most beautiful horses you ever saw, and they basically said to us, "Patricia from the gas station sent us," and so we were off riding horses again. Not the best thing if you were prone to lower back pain, and finally to. I'd say add insult to injury, but I guess that's about it. Billy and I and a couple of our neighbors decided to do some mountain climbing. There's a mountain very close by where we have the house. It's called Mount Calvo, Monte Calvo. I have a picture, a Google Earth image of it, up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com webpage. So if you want to take a look at what we're dealing with here, it's right there. And there had been several attempts earlier in the summer to summit Mount Calvo. I decided to apply some American technology to the problem, and basically I spent a lot of time studying Google Earth images of the little mountain. It's not really a big mountain, and Mount Calvo might be a little bit ambitious, but anyway, I thought I saw a good trail because the previous attempts had been thwarted by really thick undergrowth and a lack of machetes. But anyway, I thought I saw a pretty good trail up there, and so I decided to take the group up. Turns out that the trails weren't quite as good as we thought. Got about two-thirds of the way up, as you'll see on the picture. I marked our highest point, but we've got a better plan now because somebody else was looking at the Google Earth image, and they saw a really good trail coming up from the other side of the mountain. So not this weekend, but next weekend, I think we'll head out there, and hopefully we will reach the summit of Mount Calvo. I mean, this is all very, very kind of appropriate for me right now, because on my new Kindle book that I got from my wife on my birthday, I'm reading a really interesting book about this particular region of Italy in which we're living, and it's called the Mountains of St. Francis. And it's by Walter Alvarez. Walter Alvarez is the guy who discovered the geological layer that is related to the Yucatan asteroid or comet impact that did away with the dinosaurs. And it's a really interesting book. It's a it really conveys his enthusiasm and love for geology. There's a lot of Italy mixed in, a lot of comment on the society and the area in which the geologists were working. A really nice book, and I have it on the Kindle and I take it out with me there, and so it was really very nice to go out and actually kind of experience the mountains a bit. Yeah, so that's the Italy travelogue this week. Related to Italy travelogue, we had a solder smoke visitor, and this was, gosh, it must have been about a month ago now, but Bob, W8SX. Bob has been the solder smoke correspondent at the Dayton Ham Fest for the last 3 years, and he was in Italy on a tourism mission, and he was kind enough to come on by close to where I work, and we got together, and we had a real good talk. Bob's a really nice fellow, a real gentleman, and it was a pleasure to show him around a little bit. We don't get too many solder smoke visitors here, but we're always happy to see one of the listeners pop in, and especially one of our esteemed colleagues in solder smoke journalism. Thanks for coming by, Bob. All right, let's see. Lots of discussions here. You know, AA1TJ, Michael Rainey, is back in his underground, nuclear explosion-proof, subterranean workshop and ham radio shack up there in Vermont. We call Michael the poet laureate of QRP, the hero of the Hobbit Hole. He's back. He's back melting solder. He spent most of the summer, I think, out gardening or something like that. But and I really was getting kind of concerned because I hadn't seen any reports of solder smoke coming out of the ventilation exhaust tube of the underground bunker, but it's happening now, guys. And Michael has been at work in his very kind of minimalist way. He started out with some adventures in a homebrew point contact transistors, and also making contacts using crystal radios as a receiver. That was really interesting. He noted in one of his reports, and I think I have the I do have this up on the on the blog. In one of his reports, he was really really impressed by the fact that the other station could hear his back wave. Now, those of you who've been in the QRP game for a while know what I'm talking about. What happens is with really low power rigs, you can leave the oscillator running, so the transmitter. The oscillator is running all the time when the transmitter is on. And what you're doing is you're keying either the driver stage or the driver in the power amplifier stage or the final amplifier stage. But you leave the oscillator running all the time because it minimizes chirp caused by changing load on the oscillator as you press the telegraph key. It's a very common technique. Now, one of the problems is that with that oscillator running, there's always going to be a certain minimal amount of RF energy that's going to just jump right past your driver and power amplifier stages, get into the low-pass filter network, and whatever circuitry you have that couples the transmitter to the antenna. So there's going to be a really low level, and I mean really low level, a signal, even when the key is up. I experienced this with my very first really serious QRP transmitter homebrew project. It was the 6-watt, the VXO-controlled 6-watt from the ARRL book QRP Classics. I built it when I was in the Dominican Republic. Had a great time with it. Built one for 20 and had so much fun, I built another one for 30. And it employed this keying technique. And it was always fun because every once in a while, even though the power output from the thing was at, you know, really about 5 watts or so, the other station would say, something's wrong, I can hear your signal even when the key is up. And they were listening to the back wave of my transmission. And Michael, even though he's working at ridiculously low power levels when the key is down, has had some reports of stations hearing his back wave. Now, I joked in my blog article on this that the use of the term back wave brings to mind a term that my kids use, and that's and it's sort of technically analogous, I guess, and it's those of you who have kids of this age will know immediately what I'm talking about. It brings to mind the term backwash, as in when Billy says, "No, Maria, you can't have a sip of my Sprite because you always leave backwash." I'll let you guys figure out what the backwash means, but I think you get the picture. I mentioned the Kindle, and I'm reading The Mountains of St. Francis, but I'm also I found some free books. There's a lot of kind of free older books there, and one of the free books that I found on Amazon was the really, really ancient Radio Amateur's Handbook by A.F. Collins. We covered A.F. Collins. I think it's A. Frederick Collins. It's not really the guy. It has nothing to do with Collins Radio. That came much later. A.F. Collins was a pioneer in very early radio telephony. And he wrote this book, The Radio Amateur Handbook. It must have been around 1915, 1916, somewhere in that area. So it's really, really early stuff. And I got interested in it because he wrote the book and did a lot of his experiments in the town in what's now suburban New York City that I grew up in Congers, New York. And I was surprised to find that one of the few technically related or ham radio related books available on Amazon for Kindle is A.F. Collins' Radio Amateur Handbook. And I got a real kick out of it. I have it in the Kindle, and sometimes as I'm making my way through the streets of Rome. Up, there he is. Gentlemen, we're now joined by our partner in Solder Smoke, Billy Mara. He walks in with his Asus EPC computer in hand. I can see he's risen today with technical projects in mind. So going to fire up that EPC and get that going. He's been off in iPod touch land, but I can see he's getting back to real computing here. But anyway, Archie, A.F. Collins, one of the things I got a kick out of is as I was reading the book, in the dedication or in the credits early in the book, here you go, Bill. He dedicates his work to a fellow named William Marconi. William Marconi. I mean, I said, wow, for a second there, I said, who's he talking about? I said, oh, yeah, William Marconi. Yeah, you rarely hear him referred to that way. I don't know whether he ever went by William when he was in the UK. I think he stuck with the Italian name. But it's an interesting book. A lot of other interesting things have been happening in ham radio. Hans Sommers, one of the heroes of QRP and QRPP, and of the QRSS beacon mode, was recently in Turkey, and he's been traveling. When he travels, he brings with him really tiny, really, really low power QRP gear, and then fires it up at the remote locations and sees which grabbers he can appear on. You know, this time, Hans's operations stirred up a bit of controversy in QRP land, related to the legality of what happens with the QRSS and MEPT. Yeah, the MEPT, the manned experimental propagation transmitters. It's a bit of a gray area, guys, and we don't want to get hung up with legalities or discussion of regulations here. But at these really ridiculously low levels, it made me wonder, how low do you have to go in power before you reach the point where really no regulations apply. I took a quick look at the U.S. regulations. I forget what the regulation is, part what it's something. You guys know what I'm talking about. But it deals with effective radiated power. And I think, and don't, you know, please consult your attorneys before you do this yourselves, but I think if you get down in the area of an effective radiated power of 14 milliwatts, then really, I think it's part 97 applies, and then a lot of the regulatory constraints drop away. My little transmitter here is not far from that level, guys. So, you know, it's an interesting kind of legal question. I guess quantum physics has us all emitting a certain amount of power at different frequencies, just just by sitting there. So anyway, I think that it's kind of interesting that in the QRSS world, we're getting kind of close to the lower limit. At which point the regulations, it's almost like a quantum effect, the regulations just disappear. Anyway, congratulations, Hans, and thanks for your continued pioneering work in the area of QRP and QRSS. One of the reasons we didn't have a real solder smoke podcast 2 weeks ago was because I was busy doing a little presentation to the RSGB convention. The guys who organized the RSGB convention invited me to come up and make a little talk about solder smoke and home brewing. And I had originally thought that I might be able to make the trip, but I couldn't do it. For a variety of reasons, I just couldn't get away. But you know what? Technology came to the rescue. And the good folks at the RSGB decided that we could do it via Skype, via video link, and we set it up. Brian up there at RSGB helped out, and you know, it worked like a charm. It was really, really easy to do. I say that not having done all the necessary prep work. Brian did it at the other end. I just fired up Skype here, got the call at the appropriate moment, and we went live with video from Solder Smoke headquarters here in Rome, Italy, and had a really nice talk with the fellows up there at the RSGB convention. I really enjoyed it. It was great fun talking to them. I hope they liked it. You know, one of the things we did, though, is we were kind of worried that we might have a technical failure. So, cautious guys that we are, I had recorded kind of a canned, pre-recorded version of my presentation and put it up on YouTube so that Brian up there in the UK would have something on his hard drive in case the Skype video link failed us. He could just hit the play button and the fellows would get a, not quite live, but pre-recorded version of the pitch. Now, we didn't have to use that because Skype really, really worked very well. And so I decided to take the pre-recorded version and use that kind of in lieu of the Solder Smoke podcast that was supposed to go out 2 weeks ago. So I posted it up on the video page. You can get to the Solder Smoke video page via a link in the right-hand column of the soldersmoke.blogspot.com blog page. And if you want to take a look what happened there at the RSGB convention, looks like we've got about 500 viewers so far. Some of these videos that we've done have amazing viewer counts. I mean, we did one a few years ago on my homebrew DSB 20-meter transceiver, and I just looked, and that thing's been viewed 44,000 times. Holy cow! We could almost fill up Yankee Stadium. So take a look at that. Let's see. What else? You know, I mentioned in terms of reading material, one thing I spotted, you guys might want to check this out. I'm a big fan of Air and Space magazine, and we've recently been talking about Aurora, and I mentioned a while back how I think I had discovered the date of the Aurora episode that I saw as a kid growing up outside New York. I think it was August 4th, 1972, and through the great information resources of the World Wide Web, I was able to put a date to the vague childhood memory that I had of actually seeing Aurora. Coincidentally, the latest edition of Air and Space Magazine has an article about Aurora and auroral research that's taken place up in Alaska. Talk about your cool jobs, and no pun intended there, but there's these guys up in Alaska whose job it is to shoot rockets up into the aurora. Talk about another one of those dream professions for a knack victim and ham radio operator. But they're doing, and they're continuing to do, a lot of aurora research up there in Alaska, and part of it involves shooting these fairly big rockets into the aurora and then studying their characteristics. This is all apparently very important for because they've always been concerned that aurora might cause some like really big misunderstandings in radar systems designed to detect missiles. You wouldn't want any misunderstandings in this area, if you know what I mean, guys. That would put us all pretty much QRT. But check out, if you get a chance, check out the article. I was really surprised about how much of an impact aurora and the solar wind can have on Earth. You know, it causes, because it generates fairly high currents in big pieces of metal, it actually contributes to the corrosion of the pipes used in oil and natural gas pipelines. Didn't know that. And so another thing to watch out for there with the aurora. Let's see, what else we got going on here? I'll just go through the list. Hey, our good friend Jorge, who has been a Solder Smoke listener and contributor for quite some time, did a very nice thing and sent me a computer. Well, I guess a while back I had been talking about how my EPC computer, is it EPC? I don't want to slander anybody here. It was one of these. Well, anyway, the computer I had went toes up, and it took me a while to recover. And Jorge had a few older laptops around, and he put one in the mail. And I'm telling you, this is what the British, as the British would say, it's the business. It's really good. It's an old Pentium 3, and he sent it loaded up with the latest version of Ubuntu. Here's a plug for Linux, guys. It's loaded up with Ubuntu's 9.0 version, known as Jaunty Jackalope. And I've got it running right now. It's sitting here on the PC right next to me. And it's running a program that Jorge alerted me to, and it's called FL Digi. It's a free program. You can get it for Windows also, and it's FL Digi stands for Fast and Light Digital Communications. And you know, I've said time and again that I'm not really a digital guy, but it's programs like this that could get me into it, because right now my old-fashioned discrete component analog self is sitting here looking at a waterfall display of PSK31 signals on the 20-meter band. And with a click of the mouse, I can just put the cursor over one of these signals and happily see all the communication and all the ham radio chatter stream across the screen here. It's really, really impressive. If you guys are looking for a way to dabble in the digital world, check out FL Digi. I'll put some more information up on the blog this week. You know, it's great fun. I've got, you know, the receiver I'm using is the, of course, you guessed it, the Drake 2B. And it's just fine. I just tune around until I hear the characteristic tones of PSK31. I fire up the rig. I fire up FL Digi. I connect the audio out to audio in, and I'm listening. I got the urge to transmit, guys. Now I'm going to have to put together some sort of transmitter arrangement here and get on the air. But I might be on with PSK31. The other thing that this laptop, and it's an old satellite pro that Jorge has sent me, is that it'll allow me to record solder smoke episodes from remote locations. How exciting will that be? I could take this computer with us when we head out to the Sabine Hills and record out there. You guys may even hear in the background the terrifying
Mateo.
The what?
Screams of Mateo.
Oh, the Billy says the screams of the kid next door. No, I was thinking about the terrifying and disgusting, you know, rumbling sounds of the dreaded Chingali, the wild boar. You might hear that. You'll hear some of the wildlife in the background. This could be a whole new chapter in solder smoke history could be opened up. Hey, Jorge, thanks for sending along the computer. Thanks for sending along Ubuntu. And, the other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, there's so many just cool elements about Linux and Ubuntu. This particular brand, I mean, the Linux has a cool factor to it. It's got a cool homebrew grassroots element to it. It's sort of the antithesis of the big company computer. You know the big company I'm talking about here, guys. Linux is the little guy. But there's this cool element to it. It's particularly in the Ubuntu flavor or Ubuntu brand. Ubuntu's got the whole African thing in there, and all the created by Mark Shuttleworthy, who's from South Africa, and each version has a name related to an African an African animal. That's why we're using Jaunty Jackalope now, but the Ubuntu community. Billy, what's the next one? For 5 points?
Karmic Koala.
That's right. Karmic Koala is the next version. And we all are waiting for Karmic Koala. But one of the cool factors that comes with Linux and Ubuntu are the really cool screensavers. If any of you guys are running Ubuntu right now, go and select as your screensaver an option called Circuits. Guys, this shows you that the Ubuntu people have the knack, because if you use the Circuits, the screensaver on your Ubuntu Jaunty Jackalope, instead of having, you know, asteroids or pipes or colorful pictures appear on your screen, you'll have this really cool display of, it looks like, with an oscilloscope screen in the background with a little trace going by, and all of a sudden these colorful resistors and capacitors and inductors float around the screen. This is a screensaver made for us. I mean, you may find yourself, as I did, sitting mesmerized in front of the screen. Now, if it goes on too long, you probably should turn the thing off. But I've had a good week with Ubuntu FL Digi and the new old laptop computer. Just last week, another one of my ancient computers died here. Actually the monitor died, and I started thinking about where I got this monitor. The monitor that just died, I picked up on the curb on the street in South Kensington in London. And as I look around the computing equipment here, we're not spending a lot of money on computers here. We're essentially part of what we're doing. I guess you could call it roadkill computing. You know, the computers we operate here are in many ways roadkill, and stuff that we find in junk piles or stuff that's been sent to us by generous friends like Jorge. So, but there's a certain charm to this. I don't know why. I know why. It fits in well with the whole homebrew, make do with less QRP ethos here. So I hope we continue in this kind of roadkill computing vein here. It might be an entire movement I hope nobody has invented this already, but if not, mark your calendars, guys. This was the day that we invented the term roadkill computing. All right. Hey, moving along kind of randomly here, Michael Rainey, who I mentioned earlier, mentioned to me that he'd been rereading a kind of an interesting book, Spy Catcher by Peter Wright. Peter was with HMG, with Her Majesty's Government, for many years. He was the chief scientist for an organization many of you may have heard of, MI5, and he wrote this great book about his experiences. There's lots of good technical stuff in it. Michael's comments have caused me to pick it up again, and there is really some good technical radio-related stuff in there. Unfortunately, for me, there's a lot of kind of discussion of bureaucratic battles within the government, and, well, frankly, I get enough of that at work, so I kind of skim through those parts, but the technical stuff is really amazing. Peter Wright, Spy Catcher, check it out. There's another really great bit of NAC-infused reading material that came available this month. There's an interview in the October 2009 issue of CQ Magazine by CQ editor Rich Moseson, W2VU. It's his interview with Joe Taylor, K1JT. Those of you who've been listening to Solder Smoke for a while know that we're big fans of Joe Taylor, K1JT. Joe is the inventor of two of the most important bits of ham radio software to come out in recent decades. One is WSJT, which stands for Weak Signal Joe Taylor. It's a weak signal program that allows the average ham, or this, I guess, the slightly above average ham, to engage in Earth, Moon, Earth, and meteor scatter communications without necessarily building Arecibo-style antennas in the backyard. I guess homeowners associations across the United States are kind of grateful for Joe's work. The other is WSPR, the Weak Signal Propagation Reporting Program that we've been making a lot of use of. It's a really great program. It's described in the most recent issue of Sprant Magazine. More about that in a moment. But anyway, I really found the interview with Joe, who is, by the way, I almost failed to mention it, the winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics. You don't get to say that very much, that our ham radio friend is the winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics, but yes, he is. It was really interesting to me to read in W2VU's article the connection that exists between Joe's Nobel Prize winning work in radio astronomy and how he used lessons from that experience in the development of these programs that radio amateurs around the world are now using. So that was really good. It was interesting to hear about his background as a ham radio operator. The whole article, it's just really, really interesting. Now, CQ went the extra mile, and they posted on their website not the original article, but a feature they call Digging Deeper, in which they provide more information that they picked up in their interview with K1JT. A lot of good technical stuff there, and I really recommend that you take a look at it. I have the link up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page, so please check it out. I think you guys will really, really enjoy it, and get a hold of the October 2009 issue of CQ Magazine. Three cheers to CQ for a really excellent article. Thanks very much, Rich. And something else new on the in the ham radio world. A couple new things. First of all, Sprat 140, issue 140 of Sprat Magazine is out, and it is a really, really fine business edition. I this one really looks slick. I don't know. I know over time, of course, as technical advances come to us, Sprat is always attempted to improve. And this one, what really struck me about this one was not only the really great articles in there, but the graphics, the pictures are really, really good, really nice. So check out Sprat 140. There's kind of a nice theme in this Sprat, this issue of Sprat. It's kind of a mixture of high technology and low technology, I guess, or high technology and simple technology. And a lot of this has to do with Whisper. Roger has a great article in the beginning, the very first issue, first article in this issue of Sprat is about Whisper, the program, the Joe Taylor program that we just were talking about. And there's another really good article in there about how to build a simple receiver for use with software-defined radio programs. So I think it's nice that you could take really sophisticated computer software and link it up with really, really simple ham radio transmitting and receiving equipment. It's almost like the best of both worlds, and it's an opportunity to kind of dabble in both ends of the technology spectrum. Check out Sprat 140. You'll see what I mean. The other new thing that's out is there's a new Sprat on CD, fully issues 1 to 140 from 1975 to 2009. A reminder what a tremendous contribution GQRP Club has made to the radio art. Get a hold of this CD. I'm trying to do the conversion so I could put all of them in my Kindle, but Billy's got me on video here. He's got me on video on his EPC. But one of the things that Tony Fishpool recommended is that we just take Billy's EPC along and load all the Sprats into it. Yeah. And so that we can... Billy's worried about his memory capacity. Don't worry, we'll put it on a thumb drive or something. And that way I can read Sprat, all 140 editions, with us. Excellent. Great stuff. Three cheers to the GQRP Club. Okay, let's see. What else we got here? It's hard to keep up with Michael Rainey when he really gets going. And earlier in today's show, we talked about his adventures with point contact transistors and crystal radios. Hey, he's now moved on from that. And now he has built a rig that he calls El Silbo. El Silbo. And this, hold on to your hats, gentlemen, brace yourselves, is a completely voice-powered, not just voice, but voice-powered double-sideband transmitter. He started out with AM, but he wisely made the shift to double-sideband. So now we have, God bless you, Billy, a fully double sideband, completely voice powered transmitter. There's no batteries. There's no power lines. There's no power supply. The only power that's used in generating the signal from this rig is electrical energy generated from the microphone and from the voice of the operator who is transmitting. Michael has actually made two honest-to-God transmissions with this thing. I know you guys are thinking now, some of you are scratching your heads and you're thinking, hey, wait a second, Bill's pulling our leg here. Or maybe Michael's pulling Bill's leg here. No, this is for real. You got to check it out. This may be something completely new. I'm sure the double sideband aspect of it makes it completely new. Completely new in ham radio history here. So I have a link to Michael's site up on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com page. Check it out and definitely click on the link to go over to his page, because he's got the full details, and it's really, really amazing stuff. Michael has some real connections to Italy too, because his wife is from Italy, and whenever Michael sends me stuff, there's always kind of an Italian element to it. So I hope I don't offend anybody. No offense intended. This is all taken and said in the context of our great love for Italy. But Michael mentioned that one of the components that he used in building this rig was an olive can, and our country house is in the middle of an Italian olive grove, so I immediately realized that there was an Italian connection to Michael's work. you know, we often joke here that there are, you know, three or four substances that really are essential to Italian life. One of them is olive oil. We have stopped putting butter on our bread. We will never again put butter or margarine on our bread. What do we put on our bread now, Billy?
Olive oil.
Olive oil, yeah. You guys got to give it a try. I'm telling you. Once you convert, you'll never go back. You know, some of the other important substances to Italian life, and Billy, here, tell me, what else? What else do we have on our list? Nutella, cappuccino, and not so much for us because we're kind of teetotalers, but un po' di vino bianco, right? Yeah, some white wine there. These are the main substances that power Italy, and Italy is a powerhouse country, intellectually, creatively, and in terms of innovation. This is one of the, you know, look, this is the country of Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo.
Marconi,
that's right. Don't forget Marconi. The substances that keep this going are, as we mentioned, I think, not necessarily in this order, olive oil, Nutella. Billy mentioned Nutella. You guys the States might not know what Nutella is. It's a chocolate spread, a delicious chocolate spread with sort of a nutmeg element there too, I think,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, it was recently a newspaper article listing Italy's richest men. And one of those listed was the inventor of Nutella. And when I told the kids about that, they kind of looked at me and said, well, yeah, and rightly so. All right, Nutella. Cappuccino. Look, you guys, cappuccino is just not kind of a fancy kind of coffee that you get at Starbucks. You really got to live here in Italy to understand the importance of cappuccino. Cappuccino is an important part of Italian life. It has to be prepared properly, has to be prepared at the right temperature, you got to have the right milk. The guy he's got to wrap the milk thing twice before he pours it. You got to have the right kind of cup. Thank you, Billy. And it becomes an important part of your day. You're not supposed to have cappuccino after 10:30 in the morning. But let me tell you guys, I've been here 2 years, and if at around 10 o'clock I have not yet had my cappuccino with a cornetto, which is like a little Italian version of a croissant, I start twitching. I get nervous and irritable. So in about a half hour, my lovely wife Elise is going to wake up, and one of the first things she's going to say is, let's head out to the bar to get our cappuccino and cornetto. But anyway, I digress. I told Michael that he needs to find ways to incorporate not only the beloved olive, but these other elements of Italian life into his voice power transmitter. And I suggested that one of the ways he might want to do this, you know, you can't just speak softly when you're using a voice power transmitter. You really need to generate some audio power, if you know what I mean. I think it gives new meaning to the term speak up, or perhaps even to the term, to the derogatory term blowhard. But I this might be a good rig for all those guys out there who seem compelled to scream into their microphones. This is a rig for them. Talk about splatter. Anyway, I said, Michael, you know, one of the ways you could bring an Italian element into this is, I think that when you're speaking loudly into your mic, and I'm doing it right now, you need to use your Italian hand signals. You know, when you speak Italian, even a foreigner, it's an amazing thing. Even foreigners find ourselves speaking with our hands. There's something about the language that makes you want to speak with your hands. So I told Michael, I said, when you're speaking into that transmitter, and I'm doing it now. Billy's laughing because I'm doing it now. When you speak into that transmitter, be sure to be using the appropriate Italian hand signals, the emphasis points. You know, sometimes you put your hands together like you're praying. Other times you just bring your fingers together with a sort of, what do you want? The onion. What do you want from me? This kind of thing. And this might help generate the appropriate levels of sound power for a voice power transmission. The other thing I suggested is that, you know, there's big regional variations in Italy, and I suggest that, especially in terms of the hand signals and perhaps in terms of the voice volume, I suggested that Michael go Neapolitan. You know, Naples, southern Italy, they are really the masters of the hand signals. They're also, I think, operating at a somewhat higher audio power level, if you know what I mean. And I said to Michael that he needs to put himself in a very Neapolitan frame of mind before he attempts to make a voice-powered QSO. I told him to imagine a situation. Imagine that you're in Naples and someone has just bumped into your car with his car, or vice versa, and you've both stepped out onto the street and you're beginning a discussion of who's at fault. Most of you guys have never been into one of these discussions. I have. And let me tell you, it will generate very, very high levels of audio power. So, Michael, I leave that with you as my suggestion. When using this transmitter, try to incorporate not only the olive oils, but some Nutella, some vino bianco, some cappuccino. Go Neapolitan and put yourself into that, you know, fender bender in Naples mindset. I think this will generate at least 20 milliwatts.
Yeah.
Billy's been there. He knows what I'm talking about. All right. That's it. We'll call that the Italian job. Thanks, Michael. All right. Let's see a report now from the Ponticelli Scandria Rieti Summerhouse QRP and radio and astronomy site. We were out there last weekend. I fired up the HW8. This was in the odd moment between piggyback ride, horseback riding, and mountain climbing, but I did get the HW8 fired up to the doublet antenna. I only made two contacts, but they were really good ones. I was on 20 meters. The first station I worked was Uniform November 9 Golf Delta, UN9GD. And I wrote it down in my log, and I knew it was, sort of Russian, the call sign, but I don't have a guidebook out there with me, I've been away from the bands a while, so I've kind of lost familiarity with what each of these prefixes mean. And it was only when I got back to Rome and Googled him that I realized that I had worked a station in Kazakhstan, specifically in the capital of Kazakhstan, in Almaty. Hey guys, that's way out there. That's almost in China. Holy cow, that's real DX for me. I was very pleased, but then I was even more pleased with the second station I worked. And again, this was on 20 meters. A very weak signal was coming through, DK1HW/P. DK1HW/P, portable station in Germany, and he was a SOTA station, a Summits on the Air station. He was running only 4 watts using an Elecrafters KX1. And, you know, I told him, I said, I too am in the outdoors. I'm not up on a mountain, but I was operating from the great outdoors. We're in a valley. But it was really kind of cool to work another QRP station, somebody who was outside and struggling with the elements. And QRP to QRP on 20 meters. A great contact. So I was real happy with the two contacts I made last weekend. Let's see. All right, guys. We have him live here, Bill. So why don't you help out and provide some live audio here instead of going with the recording? Let's see. He's going to come over here. And it's now time for Solder Smoke Mailbag.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. All right. All right. Wait a second. We didn't. Hold on. The gong, you know?
It's over there, yeah, behind the dead computer.
All right, yeah, okay, so we're going live here. I'm going to begin with the recording. All right, let's try it again. Come over here. It's time for Solder Smoke Mailbag.
It's awesome.
It's awesome, there you go. Live. All right. Hey, I even managed to bang the gong during the presentation to the RSGB, the RSGB convention. So I'm sure some of the guys who were there who were not Solder Smoke listeners were wondering what the heck I was doing. But we banged the gong for the RSGB convention. All right, let's see. Got a bit of mail here this week. Kelly, WB8WQS, sent me an article. This is part of our effort to track down the article that caused me to try to build a simple varactor-controlled direct conversion receiver back in the 1970s as a teenager. You know, I've been saying that I want to take another shot at this project. Kelly points out that 73 Magazine ran an article around this time with a title something like Simple Seaver. And some of the features of it were that it could be built with all Radio Shack parts. And he recalls that it was a companion piece to a transmitter project that had been described earlier in 73 Magazine. So if any of you guys have a big collection of 73s and an index, check it out for me, will you? It's called Simple Seaver, and he has it spelled simple and then the second word apostrophe Seaver, C-E-I-V-E-R. 73 Magazine, one of the distinctive features being buildable with all Radio Shack parts. All right. Hey, this next bit of mail reminds me that I need to plug the book. You know, we don't burden you guys with a lot of advertising, but we are selling the Solder Smoke book. It's selling pretty good. People seem to like it. And so this weekend, we have a sale. You know, Lulu, the folks at Lulu who actually print the book and mail it out, have sales on many weekends, and they're running kind of an early Halloween trick-or-treat sale. You can save 15% off the already low price of Solder Smoke, the book. And so I have a link to this up on the Blogspot page. Check it out. It's a good time to buy the book. Buy it over the weekend, and you'll save 15%. But what reminds me of this is an email that we got from a listener, and he points out to me that I can say completely, honestly, and legitimately here that the Solder Smoke book has actually been purchased by James A. Michener. How impressive is that? James Michener has purchased the Solder Smoke book. I mean, I was really, really pleased. And that comes to us from James Michener, K9JM. How about that? Thanks very much, James. I'm really glad you got the book. And I may put that on the back cover, you know, that this book has been purchased by James A. Michener. Send us a review, because a review by Michener would really, I would really help sales. Thanks very much, James. K9JM. All right. Tim, KI6BGE, writes that he is a lifelong victim of the knack. He's now going to get into QRSS transmissions because of what he's heard about here on Solder Smoke. And he's looking for a homebrew keyer circuit. If anybody's got an idea for a simple automatic keyer circuit that that Tim could use, send it to us, and we'll pass it on to him. I was really pleased to get email from Niles PA1 DSP, and he sent me a really, really cool link to an astronomical site that puts things in perspective. It starts out with the size of the Earth and then compares the size of the Earth to different objects in the solar system, and then we go extrasolar and extragalactic, and really kind of interesting stuff. I'll put that up on the blog. Thanks, Niles, for sending that. And then, guys, I'm going to close this week with email from two of the real greats of the QRP world. Got an email from George, G3RJV, the creator and editor of Sprat Magazine. George has recently retired, and I was exchanging emails with Tony Fishpool about upcoming conventions for next year, and well, we might be able to get back to the UK to participate in next year's GQRP. Convention. I know that this year's version takes place this weekend, and so good luck to the GQRP Club in their annual convention. But I sent a message to George, and I told him, greetings from my Rome Wabi Sabi Shack, and in one of George's presentations, I think at Dayton, he had spoke about solder smoke and about how I had inadvertently or unconsciously, not intentionally, incorporated into the construction of my shack a design principle from Japan known as wabi-sabi. My wife was very impressed because she's a garden designer and had heard about wabi-sabi, and so she was very grateful that George made use of this term. And when I told him, I said that I was greetings from my Rome wabi-sabi shack. He replied that he said greetings from his tiny shack in his new retirement home. He said that some friends had come by and had seen his new shack and it had remarked that it was like the control room of a submarine. he's got a picture of it on the inside cover of Sprat 140. It looks just fine, George. And you know, it made me think that good things come in small packages. And I'm going to reach over. I have a QSL card from India. QSL card from India on the wall from VU2BK, and he's got a quote from Confucius, 550 to 473 BC, and it says, "I live in a very small house, but my windows look out on a very large world." So I think that's the spirit, George, and your work with Spratt has had a big impact on the very large world of knack victims and home brewers and radio amateurs. So good luck there in the new shack. Another great of ham radio. We've had an email exchange with Wes, W7ZOI. Wes recently took some of his QSL cards and put them up on his webpage. And I just think they're fantastic. I mean, they're really interesting. And some of the QSL cards that he's exchanged with some of the other kind of heroes of QRP and homebrew and other noteworthy people in this game, really interesting stuff. And I really recommend that you take a look. I've got a link to Wes's page on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com. A blog page. Check it out. And you know, there are two links there. One to the QSL cards, and the other to Wes's description of his own shack. But something I didn't know. Wes described how he got his initial exposure to homebrew ham radio. And what happened was, as a boy, he had a paper route. So did I. But he had, in the 1950s, he had built a crystal radio, and he used to listen to the crystal radio as he folded his newspapers in preparation for delivery. And one of the stations that he could pick up, and it was on 75 meter AM, definitely not a QRP station, but a guy in his local area was regularly on 75 meter AM with about a kilowatt, and Wes could pick him up on his crystal radio. And he listened to this guy, and it was through listening to him, if I've got the story correct, that Wes got his first exposure to somebody who built ham radio equipment just for the joy of it. And Wes made a comment. He said, "Man, this guy's station was really hardcore homebrew. Even the knobs on his transmitter or the knobs on his receiver, even the knobs were homebrew, man." That's really scratch built. So, hey Wes, thanks for sharing those QSLs with us, and thanks for all the email and the encouragement. All right, guys, that brings us to the end of Solder Smoke 117. Hope the fall is going good for you. Hope Halloween treats you well. Be kind to the trick or treaters. Our kids will be doing some trick or treating over here in Rome. And like I said, be sure to check out Solder Smoke, the book, A Halloween Sale. Hey, enough of the crash commercialism. 7-3 from Rome.